Good morning, church.
Good morning.
It is wonderful once again on the Sabbath day to come together. And we're glad that we can come together near and far. So we welcome you in the sanctuary, this beautiful house of prayer, prepared for you to worship this hour. And at home, our online congregation, in this community, in this state, around the country, around the world, we're so glad that you're with us this day. We are one church in two forms.
Good morning, church.
Good morning.
This morning's first New Testament lesson comes to us from the love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 through 13. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I have nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a person, an adult, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Then when we shall see face to face. Now I know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. This morning's second New Testament lesson comes to us from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 14, verses 1 through 21. Hear these words. At that time, Herod the Tetrarch heard the reports about Jesus, and he said to his attendants, "This is John the Baptist. He has risen from the dead. That is why miraculous powers are at work in him." Now Herod had arrested John and bound him and put him in prison because of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife. For John had been saying to him, "It is not lawful for you to have her." Herod wanted to kill John, but he was afraid of the people because they considered John a prophet. On Herod's birthday, the daughter of Herodias danced for the guest and pleased Herod so much that he promised her with an oath to give her whatever she asked. Prompted by her mother, she said, "Give me here on a platter the head of John the Baptist." The king was distressed, but because of his oaths and his dinner guest, he ordered that her request be granted and had John beheaded in the prison. His head was brought in on a platter and given to the girl, who carried it to her mother. John's disciples came and took his body and buried it. Then they went and told Jesus. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place, and it's already getting late. sent the crowds away so they could go to the villages and buy themselves some food. Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." "We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. This, my friends, is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
If in about the year 1850, there was such a thing as a man in the street interview, and if the interviewer randomly stopped a man and said, "What are the 3 hardest things that you have to do every day?" He might have said, "Well, I have to go out and find a rabbit and shoot it for us to have dinner." He might have said, "Well, I have to go cut down a tree so we have firewood." Or he might have said, "I have to repair all the fence around the corral to keep the animals in." Today, if we had a similar interview on the street, someone went up to a person and said, "So what might be 3 really hard things for you to do?" They might say, "I could never take a cold shower. That would be really hard." They might say, "I can't speak in public. That would be very, very hard." And I'll bet a whole lot of them would say, "I couldn't go 2 hours without looking at my phone." Things change over the years, don't they? But there's always hard things in life. And today I want to talk with you about what I truly consider to be the hardest thing for Christians to do. And that's rather extreme. But I do believe this. What we ask is the hardest thing for followers of Jesus to do. I believe that it is this. The hardest thing is for Christians to keep on loving other people, especially those closest to them, after there has been some kind of a wound. The hardest thing is to keep on loving after there has been some type of a wound or a breach in the relationship. Now, we've been talking about victorious living for 2 weeks. And I certainly believe that the Bible gives us clear guidance on how to live in a way that elevates us above anything that would defeat us, diminish us, demean us. There is a more excellent way. And that is victorious living, living at the plane of where Jesus taught and lived. And that's where we go today, with this challenge of trying to keep on loving those who have hurt us in one way or another. Let's be clear to know what love isn't. Because when we start talking about love, it's so easy to get confused and to think that everything is loving, when indeed that's far from the truth. So, for example, there are relationships that you have in your family with close dear ones where keeping score is a part of the mindset. One person does this, and so you think, "Well, now I must do that." And so we go back and forth. There's a kind of a gamesmanship going on. We're keeping score. That's not love. Another aspect of it is that sometimes we think that if we do things that enable people, That's loving. But enabling is basically doing for another person what God intended them to do for themselves. It becomes codependency. And that's not love. Or manipulation, whereby anger or fear, we manipulate people to say certain things or to do certain things in our relationships. That's not love. As Corinthians says, also not love, envy, boastfulness, pride. There's a lot of things that just are not love. And so it reminds me of a young man who was smitten with a girl and just deeply falling in love. They were in college. And he was so much in love that he just wanted to send a note and let her know how much he loved her. This is the note he wrote. He said, "Dear Anne, for you I would climb the highest mountain, swim the deepest river, trudge across the wildest desert. I love you. P.S. I'll be over to see you on Saturday if it doesn't rain." You know that certain things are not love. The other side is clearly what love is, and that we have well documented. You heard a passage read a moment ago where we see some of it in 1 Corinthians, the love chapter. But throughout the scriptures, God has revealed to us what love looks like. And the kind of love today that we're talking about is the very highest kind. It's called agape. And agape love is completely self-giving. It's the kind of love that empties the self, thinks nothing of the self, and thinks only of the welfare of another person. It is unconditional. When Scripture says God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, God did that. He emptied himself completely by sending Jesus for the whole world, unconditionally, no limits. That kind of love is the love we're thinking about today. It's hard, no doubt, but that's the standard for Christ-like living and loving. The passage you heard a moment ago is a lovely and powerful example of what it means to keep on loving. You heard it read. It's the story of Herod, the Roman leader in Palestine. He is a weak, vacillating, and paranoid guy. And he knows about Jesus. He knows about John the Baptist, who has introduced Jesus. He knows both of them have been making some trouble. And so he's keeping his eye on them. But he doesn't want to do anything, especially with John the Baptist, to cause any extra trouble. So he's just got him in jail. He's not going to do anything. Just to keep him out of the way. But then it's Herod's birthday. On the birthday, big party, you can be sure a lot of alcohol, a lot of dancing. In fact, Herodias is doing lots of dancing and making everybody very pleased. She's a beautiful woman. And after she dances for a long time, Herod says to her, "Thank you so much. Because you have been so good to entertain us, I will give you anything you want." And she says, at the behest of her mother, who's a political operative, "Give me the head of John the Baptist." And Herod regretfully has to do that. He sends word. And John is executed. The head is brought before him. And the word gets to Jesus. And when the word gets to Jesus, we recall how much John and Jesus loved each other. Of course, John had baptized Jesus. They were actually cousins. And these two were dear, dear friends. When the word gets to Jesus, listen to what Matthew tells us is the text. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Now, hold that on the screen, because look at the powerful message. When he heard what had happened, when he heard that his dear friend, his cousin, his soulmate had been murdered. He grieved, surely wept, brokenhearted. And because of that deep pain in Jesus' soul, he withdrew. He pulled away. He wanted to be alone. He went privately. Didn't invite anyone else to come. He really wanted to go alone. And he did it. Went to a solitary place. You see the three words: withdrew, privately, solitary. Does that not tell you he wants to be alone with his grief and his thoughts and his sadness? Then, let's look at the next line. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. Jesus is in a boat. He's going across the northern part of the Sea of Galilee. That's where he's going to go and get private time. The people urgently wanting more from him, walk around the shore, actually get there before his boat gets there. And when that happens, and Jesus landed, he sees this large crowd, and he had compassion on them, and he healed their sick. In that moment, Jesus completely sets aside what he wants. He sets aside his grief and his sadness and turns back immediately to the needs of other people. He kept on loving. And such is the example for us. To keep on loving no matter what happens. I can't help but think that just maybe Jesus was a little annoyed at the crowd. Won't you just leave me alone for a little while? Don't you know what has happened? But we hear none of it. He just kept on loving. Elsewhere, we see this pattern all the time with Jesus. A few weeks ago, we spoke about Jairus. Jairus comes to Jesus and says, "My daughter is very, very sick. Will you come and help her?" And he says, okay. And so they're walking through the streets and the crowds on their way to see his daughter, where Jesus will go and presumably heal her. But then, right in the middle of the crowd, right in the middle of this journey to do this good deed for another, a woman touches the hem of his garment. He feels power go out from him, and he stops right then. And he talks to her. And he heals her. Even though he's busy on one task, he has time to keep on loving somebody else. Over and over, Jesus' pattern. We are like Jesus to keep on loving, and we especially are to do that when it's very hard. And when is that? It is when people in our family and in our circle of friends hurt us. When they take us for granted, when they lie to us, when they use us, when they insult us. All these things happen in families because that's how life is. And because of it, families and love can fray and become distant. And the only way to stop that is to keep on loving the way Jesus does. The only way. Oh, we have our games, and we have our rituals, and sometimes we pretend that everything is all right when we have been hurt. But the only way to heal is to immediately keep on loving. Like Jesus did. There's a story out of a shore area, perhaps down the Jersey Shore. In one town, there was an apartment building where people who want to rent for a couple of weeks or a month will go. You know the scene. So in this particular apartment building, There was a couple downstairs, and they were renting for the whole summer. Upstairs, there had been some folks coming for a week at a time or two. A family couple moved in upstairs. Guy and a girl. As soon as they moved in, they could tell something was different. Within about 4 days, the odors were terrible. And then within a week, the downstairs neighbors started seeing roaches. And the smell got worse and worse. The upstairs family stayed for 3 weeks and then went on their way. The downstairs neighbors complained to the landlord and said, "You need to check this out." And so they went upstairs to see what had been happening because the apartment reeked. When they got upstairs, the landlord discovered that this short-term couple who had stayed there but 3 weeks had used one of the rooms for garbage. All the garbage had been put in that one room, of course, leading to a stench and to roaches. A theologian who tells this story writes this insightful comment about that. Listen. He says, "I believe that inside all of us, deep in our hearts, we have that place that we're too embarrassed to show anyone. It may only be cabinet-sized or closet-sized, but we all have it. And it's filled to the brim with all the junk and filth and past hurts and anger and jealousy and sins of our past. And the only way to clean it up is to open the door and to let Christ in. The only way to clean it up is to open the door and let Christ in." I contend with you today, friends, that any time in our relationships, especially our close family relationships, that we hurt each other, and oh, we can do that well. That what is happening is that we're smelling and showing and revealing all the hurts and all the pain and all the garbage that has been accumulating in our past. And that when we continue to love such people in our family, listen, when we continue to love them, it is the equivalent of opening the door and letting Christ in. Because others then see in us what unconditional love looks like. And only that type of love will clean up the garbage rooms of our lives. You and I have the amazing opportunity to love each other in such a way that we can heal each other by keep on loving. Because such love is of God. Will you pray with me? Oh God, you have revealed the type of love that truly is life-changing. We've seen that, God. We know that. But Lord, sometimes we're just too selfish to show that kind of love. So today, Lord, we pray that you would nudge us along to be the kind of loving servants, the kind of loving family members, the kind of loving friends that is so unconditional, is so complete, that when other people see it, they find themselves healed of the pains of the past. God, you know we are a work in progress, but we know that this is your will. So give us strength and guidance along the way to love one another and to keep on loving one another every day. Amen.